Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this episode of the Sports Sermon. Today, we've got a hot fire debate for you guys. We're going to be talking about if college athletes should get paid. I am joined today by a few sports experts. First, we have Graham Pirro, Executive Opinions Editor.
Hi, everyone.
Also, Parker Houston, Associate Editor.
My boys are worth $1 billion.
And finally, Alex Lewontin, Associate Editor and award-winning investigative journalist.
Relevant to the topic at hand, I think I should preface everything by saying I'm a noted communist sympathizer.
All right. Noted. So today we are going to talk about whether college athletes should get paid, as I just said. The one tweet that really sparked my interest in this, I think this is an issue that is always ongoing. I always see Jay Billis tweeting about it, and I always see Doug Gottlieb tweeting against him, and it happens,
I think it happens
every single week. But after the NCAA tournament, I saw this tweet that really just kind of stuck with me. It was from Tim Reynolds, an AP sports writer. And what he said was that Roy Williams got a $925,000 bonus for UNC's NCAA tournament victory, and the players got awesome t-shirts and hats, which I think is a fair way to put it. First off, I'll just get some opening statements. What do you guys think about this issue in a couple minutes?
$92,000 is $92,000. Those t-shirts, priceless.
Okay, going off of that. I would say I'm against paying players in general. I think there are a lot of arguments against it. The two strongest for me are, first off, you look at the compensation benefits they already receive, and secondly, would you be requiring, small town colleges to pay their players as well? Or would this just be something that you would apply to larger, big program schools like Bama, which I think becomes problematic when you're picking and choosing which colleges need to pay their players and which don't, which I will get into more of later, but to start off.
Well, first I'd like to say that those t-shirts may be priceless to the athletes, but you know who else they're priceless to?
Don't say it.
The developing world children who got the losing team's t-shirts. But I am...
Okay. That's a good start.
I am entirely in favor of paying college athletes. They are working basically a full-time job on top of going to school. And so, yes, they get an education as a reward, but they are working twice as hard as anybody else. They are working for that education and working for their team.
My actual take is somewhere in between. I think that you can pick and choose which athletes to pay and which schools that athletes get paid at.
Mm. I think I kind of agree with you there. I think I kind of fall into where I think an athlete should be able to profit off of his or her likeness, but I don't know if the school should necessarily pay. So let's get into the points then. So one thing that both Graham and Lewontin raised was that colleges should or should not pay their players up front, and that the education amounts to somewhat of a salary. Do you guys want to expand on that a bit more?
Yeah, so I have some numbers here. First off, if you look at a school like North Carolina, so 4 years of tuition, fees, room and board at North Carolina is equivalent to $180,536. And that, if you, assuming you have a full ride, you get a scholarship to play basketball there, that's entirely free. So you're receiving all of those benefits, all those opportunities at no cost. And Lewontin said it's like playing a full-time, it's like having a full-time job. Yes, but at the same time, the amount of benefits I think you're receiving from the university more than make up for the amount of time that you have to commit to it on the court. And I think that the access to a top-notch education, obviously using top-notch in North Carolina, given the scandals in the past,
excuse you, sir.
Point notwithstanding, that the access to opportunities, I think, outweigh the cost in terms of time. And also, you also have the fact that these players get to hone their skills over the course of 3 or 4 years to then, I mean, obviously it's a small percentage, but still a noteworthy number of players go on to play in the NBA. And they're essentially getting that access for free. So I think that far outweighs the cost of time and any other sort of resources spent on the court.
I don't think you're wrong if you only look at it at a macro level. If you look at it over the span of their entire athletic career, for those who go on to, professional careers. And I think you're right that, being able to have access to free tuition through sports is a fantastic opportunity. But that doesn't change the fact that for a lot of those kids who need access to free tuition through sports, they're coming from very disadvantaged socioeconomic backgrounds. And even though they're getting that free tuition and they're essentially making, what, $180,000 over 4 years, $45,000 a year in free tuition, that's not money in their pocket. That's just a place to live and some food. But the issue...
As much food as they want. Let's make it
No, clear. That's not true, though.
In terms of...
Well, recently,
that's absolutely not true.
They changed it recently, yeah. But until then...
But there have been many, many cases before that change, and they changed that because it came to a head. Like, Shabazz Napier was one of great guard.
Was he the one in UConn?
Great guard off of the unfortunate 8 seed in the West.
Right.
man, did I want that lottery pick. But, made a big deal his senior year about the fact that he went hungry many nights, and he is not the only player in college to speak up about that.
Yep.
And so you can give them that free education if you want, and in 20 years from now, yes, they are much better off for having that education than not having that education, but on a night-to-night basis, are they getting fed necessarily? Not always.
I'd like to point out that paying a player, what is your, give me a salary, $100K?
Minimum wage.
Minimum
whatever
wage,
state you're
whatever
in.
Minimum wage is. Let's call it $100K
Let's say no, you're not making $100K at minimum wage. Absolutely not.
For that
zero
many
chance.
Hours. Well, okay, so
I'm
going to
say
be,
it's like working any other campus job, like sitting at a student guard desk, making minimum wage.
So that is less money than your scholarship.
No, it's above and beyond the scholarship.
So you keep the scholarship as your
own. Yeah, absolutely. Many students have that kind of situation.
Okay.
Many students have a scholarship that covers part or all of their tuition, and then above and beyond that federal work study, which goes directly into their own pocket for spending money.
Are we all on the level right now of the scholarship should stay, and we're arguing over how much extra money?
We're not replacing a scholarship with a scholarship. I think the scholarship is the most effective way.
Before we get into this, and before this point comes up, I would just like to say that if you look at NCAA revenues, there is far more than enough revenue if it were somewhat redistributed. You wouldn't even take that much money away from coaches who are making millions and millions of dollars a year, top NCAA execs who are making millions and millions of dollars a year, schools who are making millions and millions of dollars a year towards just their endowments even.
Mm-hmm.
You have more than enough money to go around. It's just a question of how you allocate it.
So would you pay players off of schools' endowments?
No, I would pay money. I would pay players out of the revenue coming out of the athletic programs.
Okay.
And not necessarily that particular program. I'm saying you can pay lower visibility sports from higher visibility sports.
I understand.
As, you know,
let me give you the example of a school like North Carolina. North Carolina last year made $89,128,000, right?
Absolutely.
Out of their athletic program. And their expenses were $89,080,000.
Yes, but... That's
so
incredibly
qualified to me where that
incredibly misleading figure. Incredibly misleading figure.
Talk about it.
Okay. You make $89 million as revenue. Anything you don't spend, these are all non-profit organizations. They cannot feasibly keep money above and beyond. I mean, yes, there are a few that are in this. Yes, there are a few that have.
There's
slight
more than a few, Alex.
But no. But look at the vast majority of these schools made and spent almost exactly the same amount of money. It's you.
Well, no, that's because
you are a nonprofit organization.
That's because the public schools will get subsidized up to that amount.
That's fine,
yeah.
But you can't keep that money. So you
that's
can't,
just
you,
empirically not true. There's plenty of schools with more with that keep over $90 million more than they spend.
Yeah,
where does it go then? Into their endowments.
It would go into their endowments.
They're not
or other areas of.
I'm for. I'm for paying these. When you get to a school like North Carolina, when you have $40,000 left over, sure, give every player $100.
But then are we then...
That's simply not the case. Because when you're looking at the budget, you make the budget balance as a nonprofit organization.
That's, again, so, this in this case, that's not true for colleges.
That absolutely...
So
are we saying that
only apply this to colleges that make... What about colleges who lose money on these programs?
I think,
are we still requiring them to
pay
their
players? Can we get on another level?
I guarantee you, even North Carolina's what on that list? 40?
32.
I guarantee you that the 32nd school in terms of revenue in the NCAA is not losing money on their athletic program.
I didn't say that they're losing money. It takes until you get to number 36.
Again,
to start
these
money.
Numbers are not actually reflective because these numbers represent a system in which these schools do not have to account for paying players.
Make some so can you qualify that point a little bit? Can you tell me what is the system, what people are doing? Graham also wanted to talk for a long time.
Okay.
No, you can answer that. I think
so the system is a system where these schools get a certain amount of money each year from as revenue, and then they have that money to spend. And so they can spend it on things like facilities, they can spend that on things like millions and millions of dollars to their coaches, mm-hmm. millions and millions of dollars to their administrators. And so you reallocate some of that money. You take money away from some of the vastly overpaid coaches and administrators.
That's what I was looking for.
You have the money. As you say, there's not a huge amount of surplus in these budgets as it is, mm-hmm. because these budgets are set up to approximately break even, because when you have money coming in, you want to use that money.
They can be set up to break even. I mean, not all of them are.
Not all of them are, but for the most part, they are.
So one thing I want to get into right now is another pretty big argument for why college athletes should not be paid is that, you know, obviously all of these big schools and very profitable schools, you look at like North Carolina, like Alabama, SEC schools, big conference schools that get a lot of money from their conferences, a lot of money in TV revenue, a lot of money in
North Carolina is not profitable.
In other general revenue.
As it stands right now.
That's interesting.
Yeah. You have all these top conference teams that make a lot of money, but then, you know, you also have these smaller schools like maybe Mount St. Mary's, for example, mm-hmm. or some smaller conference schools with, you know, sure they have athletic programs and sure those athletic programs make a decent amount of money, but I think the argument is that those programs don't make enough to afford to pay their players.
Yeah, and I think in that case, if it's an unreasonable burden to ask those smaller programs to also pay their players. I think that's a fairly reasonable statement. And then we get into the point where we're penalizing success. And we're penalizing the teams that do well because we're then asking them, okay, you're doing extremely well, you're making a profit, now pay your players for that. And I think that that not only will continue to exacerbate the quality of competition between really good schools and smaller schools who can't afford to pay, that just adds something else to attract high-ranking recruits to those universities, but then you're also penalizing those universities for succeeding and having good programs, which I don't think, just in the name of competition in general, I don't think is something that you should do.
Graham, do you think teams would tank for their endowment?
Not necessarily, but I do think it is a dangerous, I think it's the wrong precedent to set where we're saying if you are this good, you then have to pay penalties for that.
But you get certain things back in terms of recruiting, right? If you're a school that can pay players, your recruiting just went
down. Yeah, and I think that adversely affects smaller schools.
Right.
So I think that that's both unfair to smaller schools and big schools in different ways. It affects the smaller schools because it's harder for them to recruit because they have fewer resources. And then it affects the bigger schools because you're then penalizing them for doing well.
But the big schools sort of have things on both sides coming
out. Yeah. Right? But I think that you're still penalizing them. I think that the system in place now, although it isn't perfect, works well enough without the necessity of the player, the school's funding's player salaries.
So I have a suggestion for where that money could come from, and it doesn't have to come from the school's athletic programs. I'd like to say that I am totally fine with not about good schools versus bad schools, but with maybe dividing the requirements for paying players along division lines, the same way we already divide the requirements, or not the requirements, but the ability to give out scholarships. Division III schools maybe shouldn't pay their players by the hour, while Division I schools, I would say, probably should. But the NCAA as an organization, these aren't member programs. The NCAA as an organization itself brought in $997 million in 2016 in revenue. That's from TV deals, from advertising, from whatever licensing they can do, merchandise sales, all that. $997 million.
Right.
That money, I guarantee you, if you look at the NCAA's operating budget, they're not.
Well, they don't put it out.
They're
so
not.
We don't know.
Yeah. But that I am sure that they have some very highly paid execs, or I'm sure that there's extra money somewhere. I guarantee you, in a budget of $997 million in an organization like the NCAA, there is enough money that you could put out some sort of system like work study, where under federal work study for a student who is not an athlete, the salary is not paid by the university. The salary is paid by the federal government as part of its student aid programs. Mm-hmm. The NCAA could institute a similar program for athletes where the university is not required to pay, or at least pay all of the wages. The NCAA subsidizes or pays the wages to the students who are part of its organization and part of its programs.
So to that point, according to the Huffington Post in 2014, the NCAA did make $989 million in revenue, but they also spent $908.6 million of that. And that comes in the forms of scholarships for these players, mm-hmm. and aid to the universities, which I don't think you can just write off and say, well, they should move that money away. Yeah, they keep a surplus, but a large percent of that surplus goes to making sure that the NCAA can still function, which I think if we're going to say some NCAA execs are overpaid, that's like a completely different argument. But it's kind of like, yes, the NCAA makes a ton of money, and they're almost at $1 billion in annual revenue, but they also spend a very, very large portion of that money, and that money gets... that is manifested in scholarships and benefits to these players.
Also remember that the NCAA is not involved in Division I football like that. It's the schools that are paying the cost of kids' tuition in football. Only in basketball is the NCAA actually subsidizing the schools for scholarships.
So in first instance, in places like football, maybe some of that money could be reallocated. Okay, so I have a question for you, those of you who are arguing against paying players. So if we are going to have top-quality players coming out of high school, and we're going to say, if you go to college, you will not get paid for your work there. Do you think it's still fair for the leagues to require them to have a year of college?
No. So I'll say that outright.
So you believe we should abolish the requirement that functionally it's not, yes, it's not technically a requirement. There are ways to get around it. You can go to prep school. You can take a year off. You can play internationally.
NBA players just go international.
Yeah. But for the most part, if you're a great player coming out of high school, mm-hmm. you go to college for a year,
right.
and then you go into the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think it's fair to require those players to play for free as amateurs for a year if they're not going to get paid? Or if they're not going to get paid, do you think it's fair to just they should be allowed to just go straight to the league and start making money?
I think you should be able to go straight to the league.
Yeah, no, that's opinion. I think that's
kind of a different argument.
It should be the player's
choice. I think it's related.
It's somewhat related. I do think that something like an NFL minor league does not exist.
I think the NFL and football is kind of different because there's really no practical way to make that jump
straight from.
I think the rule for NFL is 3 years, I think it's 3 years of college. Just because, I mean, I don't think you've ever heard of a guy coming out of high school that actually can have the physical ability.
Right.
A man walked onto the Eagles once.
Never forget.
That's an extreme example.
one thing I was going to bring up to that point was that I think a way to kind of solve that problem is with likenesses. And so you're a really good player. You're coming out of high school. You know, obviously, if you go to a college, and in the current system, you're not going to get paid. But I think these players should absolutely be able to make profits off of their likenesses, in which you could do advertisements for companies. You can do, you make a profit off of the sales when, like, fucking Florida sells a number 15 jersey and, like, it's not Tim Tebow. Like, I think
I have a not Reggie Cameron jersey.
Yeah. Like, I think there are ways, because then in this situation, that money is, like, coming from the consumers. And, like, and some of it would be from private companies. Like, say, for example, you want to go and do an ad for a company. I think athletes should be able to do that, and they should be able to sign those agreements and whatnot. And I think that would provide, well, I think it would provide more than an hourly salary. I mean, these companies dish out major cash. And I guess the problem with it then is that the less talented players with less of a public...
or less visible sports.
Yeah, less of a public reputation wouldn't be receiving those benefits. So I don't know.
Although if you brought something back like the NCAA football or basketball games,
I'm in favor of anything that brings those games back. I don't even care.
No, we were just discussing that. Those games are so much fun.
At this point, it's not even about paying the players. I just want those games back. I think it's also an interesting advantage of that would be sometimes we see suspensions for players for just like dumb shit like. I don't know, like giving away an autographed football or something. Stuff that I don't care about. I just want to see the dude play football. Like, I could give, I couldn't care less if he gave some kid an autographed football or like paid, and then the mom gave him like $10 or something. I don't know. Like, I'm not exactly familiar with the details of the situation, but I think it really does not impact the game that severely. And it's like, it's stupid that they miss play time or are penalized for that kind of thing. And so like, it gets rid of dumb stuff like that.
Or even whole teams get postseason bans based on that. I remember a couple of years ago, the year that Bama beat LSU in the championship, Ohio State was undefeated that year.
Right.
and they didn't make it because Terrell Pryor.
That other guy got like free tattoos.
Yeah, they were getting free tattoos because they were selling their autographed jerseys.
I wish Ohio State had been there because I wish Bama hadn't won that.
We can take this outside, Alex.
I'm sorry. Graham sent a shot at UNC earlier.
Roll Tide. One for the boys back home.
How'd that go this year?
Hey, man. How the Blazers doing?
We're getting
off topic.
They're making the playoffs, and I don't like that.
Yeah, so I guess, I don't know, I guess we get into this point where, you know, you either, I don't know if these small market teams and schools can really afford it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's right for those players to be penalized because, like, they don't have as much of a visible likeness that they probably won't be able to sell unless you're like Steph Curry and make it big.
Yeah, we should like have sort of a baseline here. Do we agree that all the players should be paid equally among
Well, teams? And the other question is, do you only, like, are you paying every player on any sports team at a university?
Right.
Or is it just revenue?
Is it just revenue, like, positive?
Nope. I would argue that any player that is putting in hours towards a sport, like a job, should be making, I would say, not more than and not less than minimum wage.
Okay.
So whatever minimum wage be for that particular sport. Although I don't actually know about the implications of any of these receiving any sort of federal funding and whether or not that would need to be the federal minimum wage.
There are certain schools that it would literally be the government paying them at a certain point.
So they might need to be making $10.25, which is I think what the federal government minimum wage is, which is different than
versus the state one if it was a state school.
Yeah. North Carolina $7.25 an hour.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is atrocious.
That would be interesting, actually.
But what the minimum wage in North Carolina is, and why states can't, and why cities can't set their own, that's a whole different story. That could be started.
Look, until college athletes seize the means of production, we're getting nowhere. Right?
I 100% agree. That's the best thing you've said all day.
But then I think the problem is that, you know, you kind of get into this issue where, like, you know, you'll be paying the crew team, and they literally bring in no revenue.
Right.
And I mean, I think that's like, well, yes, they're putting in hours and doing work, but like, I don't know if the school actually gains anything.
In a normal job,
they gain dank memes. Thank you very much.
In a normal job, if you as an employee makes no revenue, you get fired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that really depends on what job it is. If you work for a nonprofit organization, absolutely not. That is not the case.
The problem with that is a flaw in universities in general is because they're not run like businesses, so they're incredibly inefficient.
I'm not sure I would call that a flaw necessarily. I don't think we should be running our universities like a for-profit
business. So we run America like a business? It's going
to
be inefficient.
The
English department doesn't put out enough degrees that make big bucks.
Can we agree that the universities are some of the most inefficient systems in the entirety of the United States.
Yes, but it might be a necessary evil because if you start running them the other way, like, what happens?
True. I think that there can be improvements.
Absolutely.
If we had more business.
Well, you also don't pay English majors.
Nobody pays English majors.
That's
right. That's good.
Hey, you stop that. I will have a job when I graduate. Well, I think that gets at something else because if we're going to start sinking money into the polo team or the crew team who don't make any revenue for the university.
Tennis team, lacrosse team.
What's the difference between that and like playing, you know, not trying to knock on club sports, but like playing club sport, paying club sports for playing. or paying other members of other clubs. Like,
yeah.
That just sets a precedent where
are you then saying that
by participating in, say, the crew team, you are then making a more valuable contribution to the university than, say, to choose a random example off the top of my head, members of student newspaper?
I'm gonna personally recuse myself from this part of the discussion as a member of the student newspaper who makes money off their writing.
God damn it.
That's true.
You know what? Took me a minute to get that.
Yep, that's good.
That was well played.
I think the one argument, and I'm gonna take a bit of an argument from when the USA women's soccer team was trying to be paid as much as the men's, and kind of, you know, all of the backlash towards that was, you know, the men's team makes more money and the women's team doesn't. And then, but the argument is that they do the same amount of work.
Right.
They're on the field for 90 minutes, the same amount of time as the men. They practice the same amount of time as the men. It's the same amount of work, and they should get paid the same for the same amount of work. And I think that is where you get into this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're doing the same amount of work, so they should be paid equally, in effect.
Also, the fact they bring in less revenue is not just some sort of, like, axiom that we should take as, like, a given and say, like, okay, so we'll just work from that. That's an issue within itself, that their team brings in less revenue for the U.S. soccer program. Like, I think That's not just something we say, okay, well, they're bringing in less revenue. Now, how should we, like, just, like, you know, look at that as a given and then, like, decide how to pay them from there. We should, like, say it's probably an issue that women's soccer, being right. a more successful program, still brings in
less
money.
That's a societal. That does not mean
we should not address it.
So I think an issue there is if we start making universities pay these smaller sports, I think you're then going to see universities cutting these sports because there's no incentive for the university to sink that much money into a team that is not profitable, but a smaller team, say like the tennis team or the golf team. The university doesn't benefit off of them at all, but individual students do. And I think that if you're going to start pushing more costs on the university for having these teams, you're then going to harm the students because these universities are going to be less and less incentivized to have these teams anymore if it's just a complete financial drag. And especially, say, with Georgetown's example, which is already struggling with other monetary issues like tuition, this may be, I don't know, call me out for a slippery slope here.
Tennis courts.
Yeah, I mean, like, call me out for a slippery slope here, but I think that that sets a precedent where you're going to have universities that are then going to start cutting sports that are too much of a drag on financials.
What if I propose a compromise, which is that you, when you decide, when you think about, like, what if you don't pay all your players? And when you look at what players you're going to pay, you don't consider at all how good they are, what string they are, if they're even if they're a walk-on or a scholarship player, you don't consider what sport it is, you don't consider what the revenue is. You look at their financial situation the same way you would look at any other student's financial situation, and you run that through the financial aid office, and you see what kind of, you set up special programs for athletes to have extra availability for work study, but the pay is based only on family financial ability to pay for university otherwise, and then you just treat the sport like any other work study job where the hour, you can just apply some sort of work study grant to that sport.
But I think the issue with that is that you need works, because the idea behind work study jobs is that anyone can get them. They're not ability based. Yes, there's an application. Yes, you may be cut. You may not get one.
And if
everyone has a fair shot.
If you don't have work study, you won't be eligible for it.
Yeah, but then there are other on campus jobs that are also available for those. And I think the idea is that if you don't have federal work study, you come for more money. And you don't necessarily need that job. I think that the unfair part of that is that you are setting aside those jobs, saying that you need to be this good at sports, you need to be this athletic in order to qualify for those jobs. And I think that that goes against the concept of work study, which is where the only quality you need to have is that you come from low.
And the financial aid calculations are also only made with respect to can you pay tuition, room, and board. They're not made with respect to other things.
We're already setting aside spots at a university for people with a certain level of athletic ability. Why couldn't we set aside campus jobs for them as well?
Because the difference there is that when you, like, student athletes come to the university, yes, they get scholarships, but then they benefit the university on the court. And that is something that is, you can certainly make the claim there that that's unfair. But if you come to this university and you're paying full tuition or you're on financial aid, you have equal access to those jobs and you're only making the system more unfair for non-athletes. I do think that there is an inherent unfairness to having scholarships for athletes, but it's something that's sort of necessary for big universities to have sports programs that succeed. But I think that if we were to introduce something like that, like a work study program, that only exacerbates or makes worse.
Actually, let me clarify exactly what I was saying. I wasn't arguing we make extra student guard jobs and say you can only get those student guard jobs if you're a football player.
I was
saying there is a special fund of money that's set aside, and this is not taking away money from other players, because as we all know, for the most part, the pools of funding for athletic expenses and non-athletic expenses are totally separate. Like, one of the major arguments for the Thompson Center, against the Thompson Center, was like, well, why didn't we just use that $50 million grant to, like, lower tuition? And it's like, well, you can't, because that was specially earmarked for athletics. It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So within that athletics money, what if you put aside some of that money, and it could come out of our massively overpaid basketball coach's salary. It could come out of the NCAA's almost $1 billion revenue stream every year. It could come from a variety of sources. I don't have all of the numbers of Georgetown, of any other university, of the NCAA in front of me, but like I'm fairly confident that, as Graham said, these are not the most efficiently run institutions, and we could do better with that and find some money. And that money, again, could not be used for regular students. It is already earmarked for athletics. So why don't you just say that money will be doled out to the athletes most at need, given at an hourly rate based on the hours that they are already putting into their sports, which they are required to be playing to be at this university because they would not be here otherwise.
Well, the requirement is generally based on the fact that academically they would not have gotten into the university otherwise.
Yeah, you're
in
right.
In the first place. What I'm thinking is there's a lot of assumptions that go into that, such as every single school has that issue. So what if you had a school that's books were fine, that didn't have that used all their money in correct ways?
I think that that's a much easier to case to make in the case of a big school like Georgetown, say, that where it's very visible that the coach is the highest paid employee, right, and there's a ton of money going into that. It's very easy to say, okay, we should take some of that away. But for smaller schools who are already tight on cash and might have much smaller endowments than Georgetown, that's much harder to ask of them to take money away from those any part of the university and devote it more to player salaries.
Again, I'm also fine with dividing this up by division. By you know, Division One has different requirements than Division Two than Division Three. Division One A has different requirements than Division One AA. Different leagues have different requirements. Already, it is the fact that Ivy League schools, their scholarship processes for athletes work differently than major public universities like SEC schools. Like the SEC and the Ivy League have very different rules for how scholarships are given out to athletes. So I'm okay with not making some sort of universal guideline across leagues, but I do, and you could like definitely say like, okay, well, like the Ivy Leagues, you know, I mean, they're not all the same school, but they're all set up far more similar to each other than any given Ivy League and Mississippi State are set up to each other. And so you can, and then Mississippi State and I don't know, Florida are set up more similarly to each other than any given one of them are set up to Davidson, which, so like within different divisions, you know, where the Patriot League could have its own rules, the Ivy League could have its own rules, the SEC could have its own rules, the ACC could have its own rules. I don't know why the ACC and the SEC would need drastically different rules because they're set up not that differently, but you get the point.
But then I think the problem is that players have much more incentive to go to, you know, your Alabamas, your SECs.
They already do.
But, like, I think that there is still an argument to be made that, like, kids want to go to, like, a better, you know, like an Ivy League school academically, a Patriot League school.
I think the issue there is if you have, you know, a quarterback coming out of college who could be third string on Bama but could start at a smaller school. Oh, sorry, coming out of high school. That could be, you know, third string on Bama or start at a smaller division school. But then you also introduce the monetary factor into it. And let's say he would get a scholarship from both schools. I think that the salary then, like, that's something that...
Well, then that's something I guess he has to consider. And, I mean, he's already making choices there, though, because...
If you're considering
third string on Bama versus, like, starting at a D2 school or a
Which,
D2
by the
school,
way... Blake Barnett just transferred to a D2 school from Bama.
Like even if there's not an explicit salary in mind, Parker, I do not mean this as a shot. I think you won't dispute this. There is money being handed out at Bama. Maybe not to the.
Let's make this very clear. A lot of these players already get paid.
And it doesn't go on any tax forms. But if you think there aren't donors rolling up with duffel bags of cash, like you don't understand
that's,
how
this
that's
system
a works.
Yeah.
But that's a totally different issue. But like. Look, like, you know, even between those two, like, between the scholarship rules for D1 and D2, if you're deciding between being a third-string quarterback on a D1 program versus starting at a D2 program, like, you're already making financial decisions right there.
And even so with the NFL looks that you're getting.
I don't think necessarily saying, well, they might have to make a financial decision there is, like, necessarily a reason because, like... The financial decision is already so intertwined with the other decisions that they're making that you're never going to not be making a financial decision.
And I would even argue that a lot of times Bama would pay more than a lower tier school.
How do you mean? Like,
that's the point he's making.
Yeah, that's the point.
That's the point he's making.
Uh-huh. That's, yeah.
Oh, so he...
That's what I'm saying.
So they would already almost always rather go to Bama under the current system.
Yeah, so I don't think that changes
a lot. Yeah.
That's... Okay.
You know, so then the final thing I want to touch on here is the whole Northwestern case to see what you guys think of that. Northwestern, I think it was a few years back, their players started an attempt to unionize, and the National Labor Relations Board refused to take a side on it. They said that they would not endorse it one way or the other. And so what do you guys think of this whole situation?
Northwestern does not make any money from athletics.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that. Northwestern is sort of a weird example because, again, their athletics do not make the school any money.
They're like
they're not
strangely good school for like a strangely small program.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like their programs are disproportionately successful to the size and investment that goes into them.
Exactly. And it sort of made it a tough case to argue with Northwestern because they were like, hey, you know, we deserve this money because we make the school all this money. And then they looked at Northwestern's actual sports operating budget and was like, no, you don't. So I would think that, like, if a school like Texas or Texas A&M would have gone to the court, maybe the court would have seen it differently. I'm all for college athletes unionizing if you can take anything to court you want, honestly. And I mean, they are doing.
I believe Tom Brady had the right to go to court, and I believe that Judge Richard Berman did the right thing. He's an honorable man. But yes, I believe athletes should be able to take labor
disputes. Yeah,
to
court. They should be able to take it to court.
And you right. know, that's not actually an irrelevant example because that was in fact a labor dispute that he was having with the league.
Right, and whether or not the judge ruled in their favor, and I think that what's interesting is that Northwestern, as a group of players, could already do something like unionizing. They can go on strike and just leave the university. That's not like something you need special like legal abilities to do.
But then I think they would lose their scholarship.
They would lose their scholarship, right. And it's just like losing your salary at your job, right? The only problem was these are 18 to 22-year-old kids who don't have that kind of money right now. So they were sort of in a weird situation where their employer was going to keep them regardless. And if they want to strike, they don't really have any leverage over it. So I see why they lost that case. But I think in the future, it would be a cool thing if more schools like Florida, schools like LSU, schools like Oklahoma that make all this money for their school actually try to unionize.
I am literally uniformly in favor of unionization in any industry, any time, any place. Power to the people.
So would unionization be, would that be linked with salaries? Like,
it could be. It depends on
what
really
was the idea. That was the idea.
So what was the judge's logic?
Really depends on what the union negotiates.
So I think basically the players wanted like rules on how much time they could work. Like, I think what they wanted was, like,
which is a problem,
40-hour work weeks, in that, like, you're right. committing much more time than that to the sport. I'm not sure exactly what the judge's ruling was, but I think, I don't think they explicitly asked, like, we want to be salaried. I think it was more just we want these rights as being, like, players, and they wanted to be considered employees of the university.
But I mean, it can certainly be inferred that the idea down the road was for them to get some salary at the end of the day.
So I think in that, yes, players should not be abused by the university. They should, you know, I think.
Which, by the way, working more than like currently, like regulated by the NCAA hours is a problem at schools.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that case.
It's a problem in Wall Street. It's a problem in Wall Street. It's a problem in construction.
It's a problem everywhere.
It's a problem with long-haul truckers.
No,
that's
I think
a problem with capitalism in general.
Yeah. I mean, insofar as, you know, players getting overworked, I think that certainly is an issue, and they should definitely have some sort of way of making that more visible and delivering those complaints to the university and trying to get that changed. But where I stop short is I associate unionization with salaries, and again, generally against salaries. So if not unionization, some sort of other consortium or something along those lines to help those players who get overworked. I'm not sure what sort of form that would take, but I guess I'm against unionization.
So what the actual lawsuit or the situation was that Northwestern's players, what they demanded were financial coverage for former players with sports-related medical expenses, the creation of an educational trust fund to help former players graduate, and commercial sponsorship compensation for players. So basically, likeness, I think.
Yeah, all three of those are far from unreasonable.
There wasn't actually a decision on it. The National Labor Relations Board rejected to hear the case.
Right.
So they didn't actually say, no, you are not allowed to do this, or yes, you are allowed to do this. They dismissed the case.
So I do want to say, I think that the discussion over likeness, I think that's a much different argument than players getting paid in general.
Is anyone here opposed to players being paid for their likenesses?
I'm not.
I'm not.
No, I think we all agree that like players, if they can use their likeness to make money, then yeah, go for it.
Are we? Is anyone here opposed to players being insured for injuries sustained during college in terms of their life after college?
No.
No, yeah, I believe if a player gets horribly injured in service of his university, the university probably has some obligation to help take care of medical bills going forward. Especially if they're already on scholarship and already kind of sucks if like say you're a freshman and you get hurt halfway through your first season and you're still at the school and so you have access to like a great varsity athletic trainer for your next 4 years and then you graduate and it's like, oh shit. Sorry, bud. You're not a student here anymore. No athletic trainer for you. Like, no, they need to continue that coverage.
Mm. Yeah.
And also, like, protection against dropping scholarships when players get injured.
Yeah, that's really
probably
fun.
A big number on their list.
Good. I think that's an unfairness that goes across into the NFL where, like, players getting cut.
Yeah.
I think language in general should be included in more, whether it's letters of intent or contracts that protect against just getting cut because of injuries. Which I think is, you know, because if you look at it from the university perspective, from the team perspective, looking at it from a very cold, objective point of view, they can no longer provide the service that they originally agreed to with the university. But I think at the same time, those players do deserve protection because no one, you know, goes out trying to get injured. And
right.
That just is a bad situation all around. So I think you do have to take into account the fact that, you know, the player can no longer provide the service that they agreed to with the team or the university, but at the same time, I think the system in place right now really screws the players, which is not fair.
Like every other job that you work hours at has insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's all I have, unless you guys have any other thing.
Right, Alex, I have one very concluding thought, but anything you guys have to say should go because this is a very...
No, he just
you
wants
want
the final
word.
Do
you want
it.
The
no,
final
word? No. I'm not saying
he
anything.
He wins one
I'm
award and all
anything.
Of a sudden he
I'm
wants
not
the
saying
final
anything.
Word.
Okay, so fine. What I'm going to say is that I don't think there's a great answer to this no matter what. I have my opinion, you guys have your opinion. There's not a great answer to this no matter what. But if we lived in a system that didn't use currency as a tool to enforce the norm imposed by the bourgeoisie, that we need to exactly compensate each other for any service provided. Like if I do something for Nick, Nick needs to pay me an exact dollar amount. If we lived in a society that just kind of accepted a norm that we do things for each other and on average it balances out, we didn't need currency to help keep track of those debts, none of this would be an issue. And we just fundamentally provided for each other. Then we
that
wouldn't
was
be
just
having
dizzying.
We're not be having
a series
right,
of takes
comrade.
Right there.
All right.
We need another podcast.
Yeah, I think that is a different conversation.
Yeah, that is
for another
football,
day.
Football players of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains,
your uniforms, and your access to playing football.
Okay. All right.
Love it.
Unless anyone has anything else.
I kind of want to end up like that.
Let's end on that.
Nothing can. In the time we have, can respond to that. Thank you.
I told you it was like I wasn't the password. I was told you I was just having the point needed to come after everyone else had already said everything.
Let's have another capitalism
about college
Marxism podcast.
Yeah, we should.
Sports sermon.
But. Yeah, we would need to create a whole new thing for that.
The sermon.
Yeah, just the sermon. Thank you everyone for listening. This was a good discussion, I think. If you want to follow any of our social media, you could find The Voice on Twitter at GTown Voice. You can find The Voice's sports section at GU Voice Sports. You can also find Halftime, the sports and leisure blog at Halftime GU. Also, follow The Voice Podcast Network on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. And check out GeorgetownVoice.com for all of our great content.
Are we finishing with a hot take, or did I already do that?
If you want to follow Alex on Twitter, you can go to @KarlMarx.
It's actually at Alex C. Lewan.
Yeah.
But I retweet a lot of really leftist stuff. So
I think they got that impression from listening to this. Where can they find you guys?
I'm at Parker W. Houston. I guess I retweet a lot of centrist stuff then.
I'm at GLPR22. I retweet a lot of voice stuff. But who knows, maybe I'll start getting a bit more political on this podcast.
And I am at Nick Gavio. I retweet a lot of Q-Dog videos, if that's what you're
interested in. That's the currency.
That should be the currency. We pay each other Q-Dog videos.
Or we just distribute the Q-Dog videos among the masses. from a central communal
from,
goal.
From those who are able to give cute doggy videos to those who need cute doggy videos.
All right. That's how we're going to end this. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
The Barbell for President.